Hot mic. Hot mic. Here we go.
Take two.
All right. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast from Italy. My name is Jason. I'm joined by my beautiful wife, Ashley. Together we run, own, and operates a agriturismo called La Tavola Marche in the foothills of the Apennine Mountains in a little town called Piobico.
Ciao tutti.
Thank you so much. Today is the 7th of September. It's 8:06 in the morning, and we're going to do this quick and dirty this morning.
You kind of have your radio voice on.
Hey! Boomer in the Nudge.
I love it. Well, let's jump right in then.
Let's jump right in. It's been a minute since we have done a podcast, and that's because August is a busy, busy month, and
We were hot. The last one, you heard it. We were hot and we were kind of pissy. So we're going to try to keep this one a little more positive.
We're going to have more pause mens.
Uh-huh.
Those are positive mentions.
Oh, okay. And like I said, let's just jump right into it. So what's been going on, Jay?
Well, Ashley, thank you so much for asking. August came and went, and it brought heat and unhappiness. It was one of the hottest summers we've had, hottest, driest summers we've had, and it's kind of starting to break. It's like nature flipped the switch, and all of a sudden the air feels cooler, and it's not in the hundreds anymore, but we're still dry.
We're still dry. We need the rain. It's the beginning of September, and even at the end of August, it was already looking like mid-October with the leaves on the ground and the rustling. Just everything's, given up in that sense.
Yeah, trees are giving up. They're like, screw it. We'll try it again next year. It's just not happening. My tomatoes are pretty much maybe one more go through we'll have. Other things in the garden, the pumpkins are done. We picked them and brought them up. The onions, what else is coming up out of there? Peppers and, all the summer stuff is winding, coming to a close.
And thanks, still we're having the effects of the snow and frost that we got in April. And no apples on our trees this year either. We didn't get any plums. We didn't get any fruit. No cherries, and we're not going to get any apples. It's just a bummer because it's one of those things where it was 2 days in April, but look how it's lasted, and you see the effects all season long.
The hills right now are alive with the sound of horsepower. The tractors, you hear the dull drone of diesel engines through the hills as all the farmers are tilling the fields and flipping them over, getting ready to plant their cover crops. Autumn wood, we have piles of wood stacked up all over the valley as the wood that they fell in the spring and then started to pull out in the summer. They're now stacking on the sides of the roads in preparation to move it on to its final destination, wherever that is.
And not to mention, hunting season has begun. So when you said the hills were alive, I thought you were going to say of gunshots.
No, there hasn't been many gunshots.
No, but it's this thing that's so funny because we're out here in the middle of nowhere. You don't see a neighbor. We talk about neighbors all the time, and guests are like, who are these neighbors? I don't see anyone. But you'll hear, you'll hear these shouts and calls
and
just
bells
echoed out in the hills and woods, and the bells and like a random dog barking. And it's just, it's one of these sounds of autumn that I've come to love. Sometimes it drives me crazy, but it cracks me up at the same time. And just these calls outs and shots. And so autumn is here.
And
you went into town the other day, and it was the first day it smelled like fireplaces.
God,
wasn't even that hot.
I love Italian. So it just wasn't 34 degrees the other day. It was 25. It was just like a 10 degree drop. And I go into town to do a little bit of grocery shopping, and I'm like smelling the air, and it's like, oh my God, all the oldies have lit the fireplaces because we're cold. And it's just hysterical. Only in Italy will you see people now wearing scarves, even though it's still mid-high 20s. So we're talking like the 80s in Fahrenheit. Scarves and fires are being lit, and
whew,
they're close.
It is. It's a little dangerous. It's a little dangerous out there, that air.
definitely lots of stuff coming up around here in September. This weekend we have the...
We went last weekend to the Angelica Pyre Festival.
Yes. Angelica Pyres.
That was in Serungarina. And it
Where?
Serungarina.
Are you sure you got all the vowels in there?
Serungarina. Yes. lots of R's and I's and U's and N's. And it's about halfway between here and the coast. A bit closer to Fano, to be honest, to the coast. But it was classic, sweet little, like, tiny little Italian town. And, you know, mainly just the locals there, plus us and, like, a German family or something that was so obvious we stuck out like sore thumbs. But it was lovely. They really take the time and decorate the town so sweet with the flags of these little small pears called Angelica pears. And they're famous because they'll say these pears are prehistoric in some parts. I was looking. That's what Wikipedia said. And that...
it must be. Yeah, I read it on the internet. It must be true.
Exactly. And that really famous in Roman cooking in Roman times. And
they're tiny and they're red and green.
You'll see them if you're into art history at all. I guess they were painted in a lot of Renaissance paintings and things like that as a very picturesque pear. But they're beautiful. And we had a great... Again, we told you guys this before over the summer. When you go to these festivals in Italy... We're meat eaters. We're always drawn to get, like, the grilled sausage or the mixed grill, trying to cut back on some of the pasta sometimes. Don't do it. It's not worth it. Go for the pasta every goddamn time.
They can hook up pasta, whether it's for 20 or 20,000. The pasta's always great.
We said it before. We're saying it again. We got the pasta, the ravioli.
Filled with Angelica pear, ricotta, and taleggio, a stronger cheese, melty cheese from up north.
Mm-hmm. And then with a little walnut. And it was beautiful. The pasta
handmade.
Was 100% homemade, perfectly cooked. When you looked at the meat, it looked like they'd grilled that shit off the night before. So I was happy to take my pasta. And then, of course, you had to get the side of the mixed desserts of
with all the pear stuff, which wasn't very good.
But. No, and the music was hysterical. This is what I do love about these little festivals. Small town. It's all like, I don't know, families, oldies, little just tiny town, kind of like a little Piopico where we live. A couple hundred people live there. They're all there for that dinner. The demographic is definitely older in that sense.
At this hour.
Well, we eat early.
We don't.
We eat early.
It's not that we eat early. We're still there at 8 o'clock. But it's that we go to these festivals early. We go to the festivals with all the children and the parents and the grandparents. We don't go to the... And then by 10 o'clock, when the younger people are coming, we leave. So we don't really know what's going on.
It's true.
In the evening.
Well, the music was hysterically not inappropriate,
It wasn't inappropriate. It was horrible Euro trash or boompa music, but at a volume that was just insane. Who likes this?
I don't know. And there wasn't, 100 people there in that sense. It was just.
I'm not saying that turn the music off or because I don't like the music, it shouldn't be on. No, what I'm saying is whatever music you put on does not need to be at a concert level, like where we're at, you know, Red Rocks, and we need to amplify this for 100,000 people. Holy shit. It's so loud you could feel the bass. And this wasn't even like a rap song. This is just some crappy, like...
We sound so old. And that wasn't even a rap song.
I don't know about this hip-hop. Anyway, it's hysterical.
But there's plenty more festivals coming up throughout the autumn for you to take part in and enjoy the music and the food. So first up this weekend
is the Piobico, their big event of the year. This year it is the 8th through the 10th, and it is their Sagra del Polentone.
This one is cool. If it doesn't rain and they do it right, it can be really sweet because they set up the polentones, the old school polenta makers that make polenta. These old guys who do it in a copper pot over like a teepee.
Open fire.
Yeah. And it is...
It's really fun to watch. And mm-hmm. I have to admit, it was when we first...
Oh, are you talking shit?
Yeah, a little bit.
Welcome to the local gossip section of the podcast.
Okay. I don't know if it's because when we first arrived, this was all new to us and everything was delicious and awesome. And now 10 years in, it's like, But I just kind of think when we first arrived, the polenta at these festivals, it's all about the sauce.
Exactly.
The sauce that they make is this really rich sauce that takes like 4 days to make. And it's Since the polenta is such a poor dish, the polenta itself, it's the sauce that you put on that makes it rich and big deal. I just feel like the sauce was done better years gone by.
I think it's true, too. And I think it could be the oldies are dying.
I think they're cheaping out.
Cheaping out?
That's what I think. The recipe doesn't change.
I think people who'd made it before
used it. I think that they used to say get their own tomatoes and use it with their own passata. And now I think they're going to Eurospin and getting, you know, €2 giant cans of passata, and you can taste it. Tastes tinny.
Mm-hmm. It's a bummer.
It is a bummer. And I don't talk shit over just one. It's been a couple of few years now. We'll see. Maybe this year will be better.
It is good if you find it through the little like homemade cantinas where they open up like different homes. Families will open old. I don't even know how. It's a cantina, but how do you explain that?
It's just this dank, dark room that holds their wine, and it's usually in the old part of town that's never really open just for festivals.
No, but come on in for dinner. That sounds appetizing, but it's really cute and cool. But this is the one time of year that I do enjoy the polenta with the snails.
Yeah, I think the
done in the Pio Bacese style, which is with the wild fennel and the red sauce with the tomatoes. That is good. I do look forward to that from the one family. That's the pharmacist. Mm-hmm. And so we'll have to look for the pharmacist.
Now, the polenta that we're talking about is more like a casserole. And what I mean by this is they make the polenta very, very thick, and then they dump it out onto a table over on a wet sheet and allow it to harden. And then you take a piece of string and you tie it around your finger and you cut the polenta with the string into pieces, into like
you would
slices.
Dough. Like when you're making cinnamon rolls, almost how you cut the dough with a string.
Yeah, and then you make a casserole sauce, polenta, Parmesan cheese sauce, polenta, Parmesan cheese in a big like lasagna dish, and then you throw it back in the oven for 15 minutes just to warm it up, and then you eat it. So it's not maybe how you've had polenta in other places where it's more like a porridge, more liquidy. This is not liquidy. This is dense. It's a brick.
Mm-hmm.
And when you eat it, it stays in your stomach like
It's a brick. It's going to stay with it.
Now,
that's
we learned something from Franchino. Franchino is the master polentone from Piovico, and he taught us because we sat there and watched him eat 3 plates one day. And this guy is
tiny
old guy. And we go after it, I go, Franchino, how do you do that? What's up? How'd you eat all that? He goes, the secret is you don't drink anything. He says, you eat polenta and you don't drink any water, any wine, any anything, because that fills you up. You got to have room for the polenta. And then at the end, you drink. And goddamn, he ate a lot of polenta.
I don't know where he puts that polenta. So that's a really fun one. And also during that polenta festival, it's the Club di Brutti, the ugly club, and they do a big inductions to the club, and you can go and join and be evaluated on your ugliness. It's fun. It's a really cheesy, silly thing, but they have a good time with
it. So that's happening this weekend in Piobico. The Palio della Rocca in Serra Sant'Abbondio? Where mm-hmm. the hell is that?
This is all Pesaro Urbino.
So you don't have any idea either. Okay. Oh, Festa della Patata Tartufo Nero del Monte Montone? Where's Monte Montone?
Monte Coppiolo. Again, between here and
oh
the coast.
Oh, my God. You have no idea.
You're blowing me up. These are all places about within 20 minutes,
okay,
45 minutes
this
away.
This one I do know. It's the Mushroom Festival, Festa del Fungo, and it's the Sabato, 23rd of September to the 1st of October, and that is in San Sisto, Pian di Mileto. I have been to San Sisto, and I do know where Pian di Mileto is.
Yes, that's a real mushroomy area.
Real fungi.
Speaking of fungi, the talk of town has been we'll wait to do the October one.
Yeah, we'll wait next
time. We'll keep it as a cliffhanger.
So the talk in town has been that the truffle season is going to be rough. We didn't get any rain this year, and we need rain in July and August to bring the truffles in September, October. How do we know it's rough? Because there are no cars in our little parking lot, which there should be at least 3 or 4, and we know what cars they are every morning for the truffle hunter. So it doesn't mean that there won't be any truffles. It just means that this is kind of a supply and demand kind of thing. The demand is always there, and the supply is not this year. So guess what's going to happen to the price?
Hot.
Hot. Hot price. We could see war out in those. Oh, seriously, as it's really interesting. As the price of truffles goes up, we've noticed the shenanigans
go up
too. So when truffles start to get about $4,000 or $5,000 a kilo, you see dogs, you see people poisoning dogs, you see people popping tires, you see a lot of hunting at night, truffle hunting at night. You see a lot of shit go down.
It's real shady. It gets real shady out here.
Real quick. And that's because $5,000 a kilo is a lot of money. And if you, you know.
Yeah.
You knock out a couple of truffle hunters that are your competition, and you can make some money.
Well, especially when there's nothing else.
There's nothing out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm prepared. Thank God we're not in this. Honestly, I have no desire to get into the truffle game. It's just not. I'm just not interested.
No, but we are doing a truffle holiday.
Well, I'll cook with them.
What I was going to say was, even for those coming out, if you are interested in truffles, and even if it's not a great truffle year, we're doing a cool truffle hunting package. Because why I'm saying this is, we do not go and place the truffles ahead of time or anything like that, which definitely is common practice with some truffle hunters in different areas of Italy. But it's to see, what do you really go through to find these? And some days it's nothing. So it's kind of a dirty jobs almost look into. It's you're not just following a little trail. It's you're climbing along the edge of a ravine and following the dog and digging into the side of the earth. And it's much more active and strenuous than you might imagine. And again, you might pull up with nothing, or you might end up finding something worth a fortune. We're also going to go to our friend Roberto down the road. He has created a cultivated truffle farm, if you will.
Yeah, well, when we say cultivated, you can't cultivate truffles really. But what you can do is make the environment to which they like to grow, you can plant that and cultivate that and hope, and then inoculate the soil, and hopefully the truffles will come.
But he's doing more of kind of an interactive call it a workshop, but a tour and understanding a bit more about the soil and what is needed to grow where. When you're out in the woods going truffle hunting with the dog, you're going because you're following that dog and the dog's in charge. Where at Roberto's, it's a bit more of a relaxed setting. It's not
because it's a field. Cultivated
exactly.
Field.
You don't have to go hiking. It's just so it'll be really interesting. And then we're also going to go to one of the truffle festivals, and hopefully there'll be truffles there too.
There will be truffles. When we say it's a bad truffle year, we don't mean that it's like a bad orange year where all the things freeze and there's no orange. It just means that there's not a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? They will be much more pungent this year.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think so too. Yes. So
should we talk a little bit about the misunderstandings about like truffle dinners and truffle cooking classes?
Well, sure. People tend to ask in emails if they get to keep the truffles they find on the truffle hunt. And I tell them, I have no idea. It all depends on the truffle hunter, you, the season, and the size of the truffle you find. If you're having a great afternoon with that hunter and a real nice rapport, and you find something about the size of a walnut or something, he'll probably give it to you as a nice experience that you guys had together. It's no sweat off his back. And
because some of them, if they're misshapen or not perfect on one side and the other side's still good, usually the truffle hunters will clean those up and sell them at a discounted price. Kind of like second fruit, like bruised fruit.
Good example.
There's nothing wrong with them, but the restaurants and the resellers, the commerciante, the what do you call a commerciante? They want the pretty best ones, obviously.
Mm-hmm. So he might gift you one of those if it's a bad expensive season like we're talking about right now, like Helly is, that, you know, you spent $100 on your truffle hunt. Yes, but he's going to sell this little thing, like this cost. This little
500. Most likely you'll always taste.
That's what I was going to say. Most likely you'll always taste it. But I try to explain, like, if you went diamond, what do you call that? Panning or not diamond hunting.
Someone took you to their diamond mine and you guys are running around and find a diamond. You don't get to keep that diamond.
No, this is you're just accompanying them for the experience to see how this is done. So it's,
anything we find here is mine.
So I get to keep all the truffles we find? No.
Let's talk also about truffle dinners and truffle cooking classes. I find that people don't have an appreciation for
or understanding
of how much truffle you need for a class or a truffle dinner, and that those truffles will outprice the cost of dinner by 20-fold. So if you want to take
No joke.
So if you go to a truffle dinner and the truffle – and they don't tell you – same – I tell people this with risotto all the time. If you go and order a risotto in a restaurant and they don't tell you it's going to be a certain amount of time or there's not some special to the risotto, then they're not really making risotto in the proper way. They're making it halfway, cooling it down, and then when you order it, they're throwing it in the pan and stirring it back up and bringing it back to life. If you go to have a truffle dinner and they don't say, well, it's market price or it's, you know – expensive. You're either A, not really getting real truffles, real white truffles, or B, there's not a lot of them.
Mm-mm.
It's not really. It's so what are some of the things that they'll do? What are some of the bullshitty things that they'll do? They will put infuse truffle into something. So they'll use truffle oil and then put one or two shaves on the top. So you think, oh, this is filled with truffles. It's like, no, it's filled with perfume and it has one slice of truffle on the top. They'll use a mix of truffles. So you could say, so like, oh, we're doing a white truffle dinner, but I'm going to throw a bunch of black in there too, because black are like a fifth of the price, and we'll bulk it out with the black truffles. So there's
or maybe they're putting more on because it's an old ass truffle.
Old ass truffle. So if you go into a restaurant and they say, would you like us to shave the truffle? You ask them, when did you get it? Because the people coming out of these truffle hunters coming out of these woods say it should be eaten within 48 hours of unearthing it to have its maximum potential. Now, of course, the same is true with vegetables coming out of the garden. The vegetables after 48 hours out of the garden lose taste too. But within a week or so, I would say maybe two at the most, we've had people who work in the restaurant industry in New York City come and say, oh yeah, we've had a truffle in our little fridge for like months.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever some idiot, we break it out and shave it over. Don't do it, guys. If you want, here's the deal. You can fly to Italy, come and have a truffle dinner, fly home back to the States or back to Northern Europe for less than the price of the dinner you will have in New York, London, whatever. It's ridiculous. It's like De Beers. They've created this market through tomfoolery and hype,
mm-hmm.
right? So when people come out here and say, we want to take a cooking class, and it's like, all right, I need 50 to 100 grams of truffles to do a proper cooking class with truffles. Now, if we go by the prices, which are estimated for this year, 5,000 euros a kilo, that means your truffles to put on here will be between 250 and 500 euros just for the truffles.
That doesn't include the class or the dinner.
Or the dinner or anything. You want to just go and sit at a truffle dinner? Fine. I need 50 grams of truffles for a truffle dinner. Okay, that's 250 euros. My dinners are what?
38.
All include, it's a fixed price. So, yes, I would be more than happy to do a truffle dinner for you, but you have to understand there's a reality to this that. If you want I can do one. I can give you a little truffle crostini or something if you just want to taste. But that's $25 worth of truffle. So people don't have an understanding of. They got the champagne taste on the beer budget. I want the truffle class, but ooh, I don't want to pay for them. Or mm-hmm. I want a truffle dinner, but ooh, whoa. It's like, yeah, these things cost money. You want the creme de la creme, you want the caviar, but you don't want to pay for it. It's like we went to Barcelona once during they have these beautiful red prawns, and they're huge and delicious and super sweet, but freaking expensive. From the Mediterranean. So we go and sit down. I'm like, I want these red prawns. And we're at this – ended up to be a really stupid hipster, stupid, stupid place that make you sit on these beanbags. Anyway. So I'm like, yeah, we want the red prawns. A la plancha on the flat top. And the guy goes, okay. And, says they're expensive. I go, yeah, yeah, whatever.
But I don't remember how many ordered.
He goes, they are market price. Yeah, whatever. So we ordered, I don't know, 10, five a piece. They come back and bring it. It was like $80 for 10 shrimp. But listen, these were the most incredible shrimp I've ever had. And we're there to do this. And it's like, yes, I understand that.
But he brought out
the receipt. Weight of them and how much it would cost. Yeah. Because I'm sure he's been done this 100 times when people are like, yeah, bring us enough for two. And then you get it. And it's like $80 for shrimp for two. Well, yeah, that's the price mm-hmm. of it.
But so, look at that. We're still talking about these goddamn red shrimp
I ate the shells later. And everything. I ate the heads. So they were delicious. So please keep that in mind, guys. You get what you pay for. There's no free lunches in this. There's no discounts. It's kind of like when you buy medals or like the pans. You get what you pay for. Metal costs money. The truffles cost money. There's no getting around this fact.
No, and even at the festivals for the truffles here, it's still – the wine is, you know – $2
for the whole bottle.
Everything's just the exact same normal price. But then when you have the pasta with the truffles.
It'll be 15, 18 euros.
That's exactly what I was going to say, which normally it might be 10. Well, 10, no. Wasn't 8. The one I had the other night. That's because it was really good.
That's because it was all the...
Homemade.
It was homemade ravioli. Mm-hmm. That's flavored.
But
normally a plate of pasta at these festivals is between 6 and 7.
Exactly. And they'll double the price for the truffles added in and whatnot. But so I'm saying you'll see it even at the festival... The items with the truffles will get marked up.
So to sum up my 10-minute diatribe.
Oh. We were trying to be positive, too.
I am. I'm just saying, please know that truffles cost money. If you're going to this autumn, if you find yourself at a truffle dinner and it doesn't cost, you're not paying through the nose, it's probably not real.
Speaking of paying through the nose, we won't get into details and pricing, but we've been working on our house hunting. We thought we might have found one not far from here, kind of on the other side of the windmills that are at the end of our valley, which we thought you can't get more Italian than that, than just going on the other side of the valley, other side of the windmills. And these guys just had it's a whole long story, but their idea of a price was so insane.
Let's just put it this way. Italian farmers are not good business people.
No.
At all. Here's my favorite part. This is just one little part. We asked to see the doing our due diligence into the house. So we asked to see the utilities for the last couple of years so we can get an idea of what the utilities are. So
and how yeah, like how's the house working?
What does it look like? Blah blah blah. So we asked at the next meeting we had, which was a week after I sent this email. You know, please can you have the utility bills prepared so we can just have a look at them and see what it is. We get there, no problem. Do you guys have the utility bills? Absolutely. Here comes the shoebox with 5 years of utility bills just dumped on the table.
Oh, yeah, like literally dumped on the table. It wasn't like, well, it's a shoebox, but it's organized.
No. Dumped on the table. It's like, oh, well, we start going through them. It's like, whose house is this? Oh, that's Mama's. That's my mom's house.
It's
all mixed up. There's no it's just the receipt part. So it's just the payment that you made at the post office. It doesn't have the actual how many kilowatts did you use, how many liters of water did you use, none of the pertinent information that I'm looking for. Just the little tiny receipt from the thing. So then when we get to start negotiating, they want a number that is so astronomically absurd. We can have any villa in Italy for the price that they want.
And it's way above what they said they were making on the house, which was also very confusing and hysterical to us. Because we're not looking to buy the house. So it's something we've talked about before, but... the negotiating with Italians, it's a learning curve and we're still part of this process. It can be bang your head against the wall, but at the same time, we're polite Americans when we do this and we immediately say we're very direct when we talk about money in these situations and we don't mean to offend you. But as soon as they said their price, we smiled and just... immediately just stood up and they go, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Stood up and left and they go, whoa, 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 whoa.
What's your price? It's so far off.
It's so far off. And to me, this is a signal of someone who's not based in the reality of realness. So we can never have a business relationship because either you don't respect me and think I'm stupid or you
have such an inflated idea of what the price of,
and then you're not, then we can never have, we'll never come to terms on other things because you're dealing with emotion, not reality.
No, the pool needed a new liner, just like this one. So it, like little things like that. It was just funny.
Whatever.
So
anyway, so we continue to search. Hey, we might be homeless. Who knows? At least we got a van.
We got the caddy, baby.
We got the caddy. We could always live in the caddy.
How many can we fit for a cooking class within the caddy?
We might have to drop the numbers, but all the hipsters are getting like trailers and vans and living out of vans, so they would feel right at home.
Maybe
we should just
camp out in the field. There we go. You know, you never know what we're going to do next, you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
But what we are doing is what is happening here, and this is pretty freaking
happening
amazing.
Now.
Both sets of our fingerprints have been returned by the FBI. Our checks came out clean. I'm not sure if any of you guys were holding your breath and worried, but we are not criminals in the United States. And this means with this document, we can both continue and officially start. Well, we've officially started, but our our citizenship.
Jesus Christ. That took forever. Yeah, it took 5 months to get these stupid criminal history reports from the FBI. And finally, they're here. And now we can, the last piece of information for our packets, we can mail them off to Rome. And now we can
wait for 3 years.
3 years. So we've been here 10. We're eligible to submit for our citizenship. Did we ever even say that? Probably not.
I think we've said it before.
Anyway, it's just an immigration packet. It's the same crap we give them every year, except now you need this one piece of paper, the criminal history report from the United States, saying that we're not criminals, which is fine.
I was a little nervous.
I wasn't nervous.
No,
I was
I'm
just
joking.
How long it took, and God forbid that they didn't read the fingerprints right. Because
that's what I was nervous about.
Literally, this was 5 months. You send it away and you wait because we're not in. We don't have an address inside of the states. You can't use any of the services that to expedite it. They'll only mail it back to an address in the states, which is fine. Let say mail it to a family member. Yeah, but they only put the address on the document that you give that they're mailing it to. So they won't mail it to my brother, let's say in New York, but put my address here in Italy on the document itself. The document has to match the envelope and the place that it's going.
My favorite part of it was we got our fingerprints done the same day. I sent them off, the packets for the two of us, separate packets on the same day. We saw on the credit card statement that one day apart, our credit cards were charged for the fingerprint processing. Jason promptly received his, and then...
I received mine at the beginning of August.
Mine came now
yes,
in the beginning of September. Why did mine take 1 month later to... That means that's on the Italian mail system side.
Oh, you can see the postmark.
Oh, my God.
here's the problem, though. These things are like milk.
Oh,
they
shit.
Spoil.
That's true.
Italy will not accept them after they're more than 6 months old, these documents. Here's the problem. It's on the day that they print them in Washington, D.C., not the day that you get it in your hot little hands. So
This month of extra
time. So ours were printed in mid-July. Here we are in almost now mid-September. So we've already lost July, August. So now we're only 4 months away. What happens if it takes the Italians 4 months to get to these packets that we're mailing out? Now they're going through our packet and they say, oh, your criminal history report is more than 6 months old. So we're going to need a new one of those. That is my fear.
Mm-hmm. It's a big fear. It's true. This is why timelines are very important
this
and
is
working
why
backwards.
In our consulting workshop, we harp on the timeline. You have to have a timeline. And even when you try, even.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've got a timeline, baby. Like, there's some things you just can't account for, and those are those
Italian.
That's Italians and the life and postal systems, and you just can't account for it, and you need to have a fudge factor for
mm-hmm.
it. So we'll see. I think this is going to be pretty damn close.
I do too. Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about on this podcast today? Because it's time to wrap it up to get the day going.
Yeah, we got lots of movement today. People going, people coming.
Yep. Oh, that's good. That's a good sound. I don't have anything else. I wanted to say we had a great time during our pickle preserving confit workshop. Got a lot of pickled peppers. I am loving the confit. I know it's not traditionally Italian, but the preserving under fat It's probably one of my favorite ways to preserve. And it comes out so beautiful. The rabbit, especially, I love. And yeah, otherwise we've got our truffle hunting holidays coming up in the end of August or October and the beginning of November. And we have a couple two, three night packages left available as well at the end of September, mid October.
Consulting workshop is sold out.
Sold out, baby.
So if you would like to get, if you are interested in moving to Italy and I know what we wanted to talk about. This last thing, sorry.
Oh yeah, you read it. I didn't know if it was
okay.
Not worth
so it. There is this website called The Local. They have a local, it's for expats in it. They have the local.eat, the local for like .fr.
Local.it.
Yeah, sorry. Local.it. Anyway, it's a real crappy website. I mean, it's not very good news and the writing is for children and terrible. But anyway, they had something that caught my eye today.
The title.
Not Such a Dolce Vita. Italy ranked among worst countries for expat life. And it's that typical headline grabbing bullshit, because when you read down in it, it's like, yeah, for working in Italy, Italy is ranked the worst, but for quality of life, it's the highest, and for blah, blah, blah. Basically, what it's saying is, Italy, don't be fooled. Italy, like any other country, has its perks and it has its flaws. You have to weigh the good to the bad. I was just saying this to someone else. The quality of life outweighs the bureaucracy and bullshit for us by a lot. It's just a beautiful place to live. You got to separate all the other crap from it, but don't fool yourselves. This is not, you have to work for the Dolce. There's no such thing as the Dolce Vita.
Exactly.
Here's who has the Dolce Vita: rich people and lottery winners and people who just want to sit on their ass and do nothing all day. That's that. But
yeah,
for real people, it's still a life. You have to get up. You have to go to work. You have to, you know, you have bills.
Your garden doesn't just grow. Like, you still need to put effort into it.
So to think you're going to walk around in the sunshine with a glass of wine in your hand and you're going to just, I'll just find work. You're an idiot. That's not reality. It's not reality in anywhere where you live either. So, you know, Italy was ranked lowly 60 out of 65th countries based on factors including quality of life, work abroad, and ease of settling in. Well, but then let's read down a little bit more.
Well, I definitely wouldn't suggest coming to Italy to
find work.
You need to create your own. Bring it, create something here. That is a possibility, and you can kill it by doing that if you do it right. But if you're thinking you're going to come and find a job or teach English somewhere, that's hard. There's a lot of other people thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just going to go ahead and teach English. Well, you and every other Momo expat who moves here. So you're going to have to figure out how you're going to make a life here. And basically this article says that you have to learn Italian. Of course you have to learn Italian. And, career prospects. There's not a 17% say they're satisfied with the availability of work in Italy. Well, yeah, no kidding. It's all over Europe. It's not just Italy. So,
they say five countries were lower than Italy:
Greece, Kuwait, Nicaragua, Brazil, and Saudi Arabia.
No, Nigeria.
Oh, is that
not Nicaragua? Oh,
Nicaragua. Nicaragua. So yeah,
it's just hysterical. It's all what you put into it. I mean, it's your attitude. It's your effort. It's how much did you prepare for your move here, that you're properly prepared to move in another country. Did you learn the language? Exactly. Like,
are
these
you
are
making
things,
an effort, yeah, or do you just expect everyone and everybody to come and just because you're here? Yeah,
exactly.
I'm here now.
Or
so
you want it to be how it was back home, wherever that may be.
So it's just a stupid article on a stupid website.
I'm so glad you shared it.
We're being positive. We have posmens. We have to end with a posmen.
Posmen. All right.
Oh, I have a posmen. All right, here we go. We'll end with this. My ladies, my chickens, after taking a little break at the end of August because it was just so damn hot, they'd walk around with their mouths open and their wings up so the air would move through their pits. My ladies yesterday, 9 ladies laid 12 eggs. Don't know how that happened.
Me neither, but I'll tell you, they weren't in where they were supposed to be. For the whole time, this whole season, normally they just lay right in their boxes in the coop like good little girls. Well, I think they're lazy. They are enjoying being out so much, walking around in the free range, and we've been letting the door openly in the door earlier since it got hotter. And they have found a tree that they are putting all their eggs under, as well as on the side of our house under some like yard hosing, and it's like one of the hens is putting it in the weirdest spot. It does not look comfortable. It's very awkward. It's around like equipment, like farming equipment. She has to walk through, but the others have found this great tree. So thank God we found the tree. We just have to go to the tree every day and pick up the eggs under the tree, but they're good. And I said, how do you think they knew to all go to this tree? And Jason immediately was like, you got an alpha hen. She tells him, she makes the announcement. There's a staff meeting, something, I don't know, but they all are placing the eggs under the
good
tree.
Spot.
It's a good spot.
All right. Time to get to work. I can't believe how late it is.
I know. Me neither. We got breakfast to serve.
We got breakfast to serve. We got rain coming this afternoon, I hope. And that's going to do it. Like I said, quick and dirty. We're all over the place.
Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow us.
I'll do it.
Okay, you do
it. I'll wrap it up. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, our website, all at La Tavola Marche, LataVolaMarche. Shoot us an email at info@latavolamarche.com. You can follow me on Instagram at Ashley Bartner. And we hope to see you guys out here at our farmhouse and cooking school this fall. And until next time, arrivederci.
Ciao, ciao. Thanks for listening. Bye.